Now I want to look at the next beast, the beast out of the earth, verse 11, chapter 13. And I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like unto a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Now if he spake as a dragon, this will be the voice of falsehood. Now notice he comes up out of the earth. I mentioned a while ago that the earth swallowed up the river emitted out of the mouth of the dragon. What comes out of the mouth of the dragon is falsehood, false religion, all of that. Right now then, so the earth had swallowed that up. Now out of the earth, the realm of the unregenerate, comes forth this beast now that has two horns. I think that, like a lamb, indicates the religious aspect of this beast. And he exerciseth all the authority of the first beast in his sight. That whatever this second beast does is by the authority of the first beast. And he maketh the earth and them that dwell therein, the earth again, that's your earth dwellers, to worship the first beast whose death stroke was healed. I think that's to worship the emperor. Now sometimes the word the beast indicates the emperor himself, sometimes the empire. For the emperor represented the empire. Now Domitian had set up, first of all, Nero. And Caligula tried to enforce the worship of themselves. They tried to deify themselves. They were not as successful as Domitian was. Now Domitian has his images here in Asia Minor, where they're called upon to worship him. All right, so he causes them, he maketh the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast. That's the sea beast, whose death stroke was healed. And he doeth great signs, that he should even make fire to come down out of heaven upon the earth in the sight of men, and he deceiveth them. I don't think he performed any bona fide miracles, but his power was in deception. He deceiveth them that dwell on the earth, by reason of the signs which was given him to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image of the beast who had the stroke of the sword and lived. And that's probably Domitian. Or maybe this image emperor worship had been smitten with the death of Caligula and Nero, but it's revived in Domitian. And it was given unto him to give breath to it, even to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many should not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the free and the bond, that there be given them a mark on their right hand, or upon their forehead. Now, as God sealed his saints unto him himself. Now then, so then, the emperor has a mark on the hand of the forehead of those that are to serve him. Therefore, an individual couldn't buy nor sell unless he had this permission, this mark, from the beast, from the ruler. Some folk thought back in the NRA days of Roosevelt that was the mark of the beast. Well, let's put on a mark. Maybe it was a mark of the beast, for all I know, but it wasn't the one we're talking about here. Don't get them confused, that's all. Alright, upon their forehead. And that no man should be able to buy or to sell save he that hath the mark, even the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. He that hath understanding, let him count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Now what is this beast? I think this is false religion, and at that particular time, it would be paganism. False religion. Or paganism that symbolized, turn that around. I think it was paganism, the worship of the image of the emperor, which of course was false religion. So here then, paganism or false religion, which was enforced by the emperor. He sought to enforce this. Now then, this worship of the image of the emperor, just about as much political as it was, or patriotic, as it was religious. That is, here you came, and in burning this incense before the image of the emperor was an indication of your loyalty to him, of your acceptance of him and of his rule. But when he made it religious, the Christian couldn't do it. The Christian couldn't burn that incense. Now, a pagan could, as I said the other morning. If all of these lamps were under represented images, well, then one could come and I could burn the incense to the emperor and go over and worship that god. You could burn it and go over and worship another god, don't you see? But the Christian couldn't do that. And therefore, persecution followed against them because they couldn't carry out the will of this one. Now, this second beast, I am convinced, and later on he's called false prophet. Over here in the 16th chapter, and I think it's verse 13. Now, so coming out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits as of frogs. Now, there he's called a false prophet, a false religious teacher. That's what he was. Now, then over in the 19th chapter, he's mentioned again here, when he says here that the false prophet that performed the signs, yes, verse 20. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought the signs in his sight, wherewith he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. They too were cast alive into the lake of fire that burns with brimstone. Now this verse 20 identifies the false prophet here as this beast that came up out of the earth. Now there are some writers, and some writers say that the beast out of the earth represented what was called the concilia. That is, the concilia was the bureau that the emperor set up in Asia Minor to enforce the worship of his image. And I wouldn't fall out with that. That may be correct. It certainly represents paganism, false religion here, and it may represent the bureau set up, the group set up there to enforce it. But at any rate, because you couldn't have paganism and the image of the beast without having somebody there to see that it was carried out. So actually, it would involve all of these. It involved the image of the beast here, the image of the emperor, which would be false religion, paganism, enforced by men whom he sent there and set up for that purpose. So you just put them all together there, call it paganism. And the emperor worship. This is what we're having, but it's backed by the emperor. All right, so now then we have here the sea beast, the Roman Empire, or the emperor, either one, the rulers here, the emperors, because there are little distinctions, very little distinction made in their mind between the emperor and the empire. Now let me look at chapter 14. Now here we see in the next, and I saw and behold the Lamb standing on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his and the name of his father written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, as of the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder, and the voice which I heard was as the voice of harpers harping with their harps. And they sing, as it were, a new song before the throne, and before the four living creatures, and the elders. And no man could learn the song, save the 144,000, even they. Now, we dealt with this the other morning. Even they that have been purchased out of the earth, these are they that were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they that follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were purchased from among men to be the first fruits unto God and the Lamb. In their mouth was found no lie, for they are without blemish. All right? And now, here we see then the Christ, the Lamb, let's use the word there. Here's the Lamb and the 144,000 standing on Mount Zion. Now these are being victorious. These follow the Lamb whithersoever he goes. That's why I'm persuaded that the 144,000 of chapter 7 is identical with 144,000 here. It represents those on earth that stand with him on the spiritual Zion, on the Mount Zion unto which we've come. Hebrews 12, verse 22, we've come unto Mount Zion. Out here then is the Lamb and the 144,000 through whom God operates. Now here this the dragon operates through these two. Now, he operates through the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth. For we looked a while ago, and I hurried over that, But he gave unto this beast out of the sea, verse 2, the latter part of it, and the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Back in verse 2. I give the devil, man, that gives to this beast out of the sea, he gives to him his authority and his power and his throne. Well, now that's exactly what God had given to Christ. God gave Christ sat down on the throne of God with all authority in heaven and on earth to execute the power of carrying out the divine purpose. Now then the devil gives the same thing unto this beast. He gives to him his authority and his power and his throne. So here's a spiritual conflict between Christ operating for God and the empire operating for Satan. Now let's look further. God uses something else here. Verse about 3 now, and I read through verse 5. And I saw another angel coming, flying in mid-heaven, having eternal good tidings, to proclaim unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and tribe and tongue and people. And he saith with a great voice, Fear God, and give him glory, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heavens and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Instead of worshiping the elements, the creation, worship the Creator. And I think that gospel there is the gospel of Christ. Here then, now before the judgment comes, the gospel is preached to the earth here that they might accept it and obey it and thus escape the wrath of God. Now, here's an angel having everlasting good tidings. That is the gospel. That's not Moroni, as the Mormons teach. It's not Moroni at all. It's not the Book of Mormon. It's simply representative of the preaching of the gospel of Christ to the whole earth that they might escape the judgment that's at hand. Now, here's a second angel. And another angel, a second, followed, saying, Fallen, fallen is Babylon. Now, this is the first time we have that. We'll come to that tomorrow. The great that hath made all the nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Right, now here is a second angel said, Fallen is Babylon. What? Now then, do not remain in Babylon, that is the world, the world of the ungodliness of the unregenerate. Flee from that. Here's the opportunity to flee. For Rome is going to fall. God sees it as already fallen, though it doesn't take place yet. God speaks of things that are not as though they are. That's over and over in the Old Testament. Babylon is fallen. So God has decreed that it's going to fall. It's as if it were done. All right? So don't stay there. Don't trust in Babylon and that which comes out of Babylon. And another, a third angel, followed them, saying with a great voice, If any man worshipeth the beast in his image and receiveth a mark on his forehead, or upon his hand, he also shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is prepared unmixed in the cup of his anger. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goeth up forever and ever, and they have no rest day and night. They that worship the beast in his image, whoso receiveth the mark of his name. I forgot to mention that. I want to go back to verse 18 in a moment. Here is the patience of the saints. They are to keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. All right, now here's another angel now that says, Fallen is Babylon. Now, those that worship the beast in his image, they're going to be tormented. So here's the torment then of all who worship the beast and his image. Now, here's the point. I may get by, here's the beast in his image here. I may burn a little incense to the image of the emperor. I may live, prolong my life physically. But what's going to happen to me in the hereafter? I'm going to be tormented forever and ever. All right, so then, if I then come up here and burn incense to this beast, then I may escape now and go on home and live 10 or 15, 20 more years. But here's what's going to be the ultimate end of these individuals. Now then, in contrast to that, verse 13, And I heard a voice from heaven saying, Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, for their works follow with them. Right now, I may go ahead and be slain, killed here, slain for the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. Now, I'm going to live. I may die now. My life may be short in a few years, but blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. For these individuals are going to live and their works follow with it. Here's the contrast. I think we sometimes miss it. We use this passage when a person dies to preach a sermon on a fellow that died in the Lord, and I do that and no objection to it. But I think we really miss the point. The point is that here's a contrast between those individuals that worship the image of the beast and prolong their life for a time, but then they are tormented forever and ever. Here's the fellow that refuses to worship the beast in his image. He's put to death now, but he's blessed forever and ever. Now, this is the point of these angels. So, first of all, here is the gospel preached to the whole earth. God wants people to know the truth that they may escape the judgment that's impending. Now then, Babylon is fallen. I don't care whether it's Rome or whether it's Washington. I can't put my trust in either one of them. Both of them are decreed by a divine decree that they're going to fall. Eventually, Washington will fall. And out of that will come forth a new type of government of some kind. I don't know what it'll be, but some other kind. All right. Now, since all nations that oppose God are doomed to fall, or the principles of God, then come out of that. Babylon's fallen, and those now that remain in this spiritual Babylon and worship the beast in his image, they're going to be tormented forever. That individual that goes ahead and is slain and put to death for the cause of Christ, he's going to live. Now, this is what he's pointing out here in the voice of these four angels. I omitted verse 18 a while ago, and I know somebody will wonder about that, 666. Men have taken that and have worked out the name of Nero and Caligula and Domitian and Kaiser Wilhelm and old Hitler and others. And some have worked out the Pope and the various names of the Pope. And I think that's all artificial. I don't think you can take those numbers. You can juggle them and make anything. This number represents this and so on. Or this letter represents a number. If seven is the perfect number, I think Hendrickson hit the key there when Hendrickson said that seven is the perfect number, six is the imperfect number. It can never be seven. Therefore, the number of a man is six, and so 666 is failure, 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 and everything that man does is doomed to failure. That is, to me, the best explanation I've found. I don't try to identify it with any individual. I think that you're never certain of yourself. I'm not even certain of this. But it's the number of a man. And the number of man is always a failure. Everything man has ever done ends in failure. You just look back through history. When he leaves God out, and anything built that is strictly human in its nature and character is doomed to fall. Okay, what it is. So that which is human is doomed to failure. And so it's going to fail. The beast here, the name of the beast, and he that hath understanding count the number of his name, for it's the number of a man. Failure. Doomed to failure. That suits me better than any other explanation. I have a book at home that I think has some 15 or 20 different names that have been formulated by numbers that come out the same when you add them up, and nobody is certain of any of them. So I just pass that one by. All right. Now I want to finish. Just a few more minutes and I'll have this finished. Now, verse 14. And I saw and behold a white cloud. And on the cloud I saw one sitting like unto a son of man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the temple. This would be a fifth one. Crying with a great voice to him that sat on the cloud, send forth thy sickle, and reap, for the hour to reap is come. For the harvest of the earth is ripe, and he that sat on the cloud cast his sickle upon the earth, and the earth was reaped. All his judgment. Now we have here the Lamb and the 144,000. Now we have the righteous judgments of God. Here are God's judgments that God uses. Now then, as Satan uses the sea beast and the earth beast, Now Jehovah uses the Lamb and His faithful saints and His righteous judgments. So I can look then for righteous judgments to come from God. I can look for God to use the Lamb and the 144,000, the saints that follow the Lamb. He's going to use these to accomplish His victory. So there'll be judgments in time. There'll be a final judgment. But what God is doing today, He's doing it through the Christ who rules, and you and me who follow the Lamb, and the righteous judgments that He executes. Now what's the devil using? The devil is using political force and power. He is using false religion. And we're going to find tomorrow that he uses the old harlot, which is Rome or worldliness, and all of its seductive influence and forces. We'll look at that tomorrow. Now let me notice the second. Here then is a judgment. And another angel came out from the temple which is in heaven, he also having a sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, he that hath power over fire. And he called with a great voice to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, Send forth thy sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel cast his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vintage of the earth, and cast it into the winepress, the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and there came out blood from the winepress, even unto the bridles of the horses, as far as 1,600 furlongs, which is 200 miles. And there'll never be and never has been anything like that, literally. So these folks who are talking about the Battle of Armageddon, where they'll be swimming in blood, are just plain, I started to say nuts, I'll say mistaken. They're just plain mistaken. They're in complete error on that point. Now look with me back to Joel for just a moment. And notice here the use of a similar expression here is simply the execution of God's divine judgments against the forces of evil. When the time comes to reap, the time comes for the judgment, He executes that. But He always looks after His own. He gathers His own into the garner. The chaff He burns up with unquenchable fire. Look back at Joel 3, verses 9 through about 12. Proclaim ye this among the nations. Prepare war. Stir up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. And note these are among the nations. Haste ye, and come all ye nations round about, and gather yourselves together. Thither come ye, cause thine mighty ones to come down, O Jehovah. Let the nations bestir themselves, and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. That's the valley of Jehovah's judgment. For there will I sit to judge all the nations round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come ye, come tread ye, for the winepress is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of Jehovah is near the valley, in the valley of decision. Sun and the moon are darkened, so a picture of judgment, as God gathers the grapes together in the wine vat and trods them there, under His own feet, and a judgment, and as the grape juice flows out, here in this way in Revelation, it flows out for 200 miles, various directions, indicating the far-flung extent of this judgment that God is going to bring. And so here are God's instruments now, and those that God uses here. God uses the Lamb and the 144,000 that follow, and the righteous judgment that He executes upon the earth. The devil is using political power and false religion to accomplish his. So we have in these chapters, here is the woman that gave birth to the man-child, the daughter of Zion, the spiritual people of God. Here's the dragon, the devil, Satan, that has been the accuser of God's people all down through the ages. He's cast down. He's defeated. Tried to devour the man-child, but he didn't. The man-child was caught up to the throne of God. That's the Christ. The birth of the Christ, the attempt of Satan to destroy it. Then here's the beast out of the sea, which is the Roman power, the Roman power that persecuted the saints, that backed paganism, the worship of the emperor, the beast that came up out of the earth, that which has swallowed up all the lies of the devil, for all false religion comes from the devil, it's falsehood. The earth swallowed it up. Now then, this makes war against the saints and overcomes them for a while. for the 42 months. I want to mention, I have to discuss that in the morning. My time is gone. I wanted to spend a few minutes on the 42 months. May do it in a second. Now then, in here, here then is the Lamb on the Mount Zion with 144,000 that follow him, the complete number of the disciples of Christ who follow the Lord. Whither he goes, no lie in their mouth. They do not commit spiritual fornication. And here are the righteous judgments of God. When the time comes, God puts in the sickle, reaps them, and puts them in the wine press, treads them underfoot, and brings them to an end. Now that's the picture you have here. I don't know whether I made it clear or not, but this is what I understand. And if I'd had a couple, 3 or 4 hours instead of the time I've had, you could have understood it just as well. Will you give me 2 more minutes or 3 and let me say a word about that 1260 days? I believe that this is the period of persecution. This is the period they were going through back then. It's not the 1,000 years. Hendrickson tries to make the 3.5 years here the same as the 1,000 years. No, it's not that. The 1260 days, the time times and a half a time, is that period of affliction. Now, let's just notice all 5 times that you have the time mentioned. Here in 11 and verse 2, you have the 42 months. Here are the 42 months in which the city is trodden underfoot. All right? As we pointed out yesterday, the city trodden underfoot is that period of persecution. In which you persecute the external aspect of the church, trying to destroy. Right? You have 42 months. You have the 11 and 3. You have the 1260 days in which now the witnesses witnessed. Right? Then came their death, and then they were caught up to the throne of God. That's the same period of persecution, opposition, in which the city is trodden underfoot, and these witnesses testify there until finally they're victorious. Right, now then come to the 12th chapter, and here's the woman. 12th chapter, and about verse 6, I think it is. Yeah, verse 6. Right, now the woman goes into the wilderness. In 12:6, here's the woman. 1260 days again, in which the woman is in the wilderness. All right? But the woman is in the wilderness now, dropping down to about verse 14. She is nourished in the wilderness for a time and times and a half a time. Right? And in 12:14, here you have your time, times, and a half a time. This being plural would be, could be two, but then one, and two is 3.5. This is the time that the woman is in the wilderness, same period. Now look at 13 and verse 5. Here in 13:5, here this beast now was given to him, and now was given to him authority to continue 42 months. Here is the beast that persecutes them, has authority now to continue for 42 months. Here's our 42 months again now. That was 13:5, wasn't it? Here's 42 months again in which the beast is allowed to continue. So your 42 months, your 1260 days, divided by 30 gives you 42. Your 1260 divided by 360 gives you 3.5. So it seems to me you have the same period of time there. Now back in Daniel the 7th chapter, and wasn't that verse 25 or somewhere about there, Daniel says now, yeah, verse 25, now here is this, and he shall speak words, that is this persecuting king here that's going to be, that's going to prevail against them. And he shall wear out the saints of the Most High. And he, oh, I missed it. Think to change the times and the law, and they shall be given into his hand until the time and times and a half a time. On your 7:25, in which you have the time, and a half a time again, in which the saints are given into the hand of this beast. Right, into the hand of the beast that came up, the fourth beast that came up out of the sea. I think you're saying time, times, and a half a time here in which the saints are given into his hand is the 42 months in which he prevailed here. This is the time that the woman is in the wilderness, which is the period of persecution, when the holy city is being trampled on the foot, when the witnesses are witnessing and testifying. I am persuaded that all of this then is exactly the same, and that it refers to this period here, a broken period of time, the period of persecution and opposition by the Roman Empire. That is during that period that it was persecuting, and then came the judgment of God, and the Roman Empire was brought to an end by divine judgment. Then you have the victory and the triumph of the saints as the kingdom is given unto them. Now you just take those passages and consider all of them and the context. And this is what it teaches to me. Not all writers are agreed with that, but I think it harmonizes and all fits right in together just perfectly. All right. Well, we kept you a little longer than usual this morning, but I like for folks to get their money's worth when I preach, so we want you to be sure and do that. Let's stand together and sing one verse of a song, and we'll be dismissed, and tomorrow I won't keep you nearly so long.